Welcome to Star Blue North's On Call. I am Paul France, owner of Upper Hands Games. Of an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Star Blue Warlord. Just wondering how to join us with TalkCast every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444. This follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. Or SFU on call, or Star Blue Universe on call, you should be able to find us there. Or, if you want the best online experience, what you want to go to is twitch.tv, twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you will find us there. You'll be able to join the chat room. David might be there. Other people will definitely be there, and I definitely will be watching. And I'll be happy to respond to anything in the chat room. And it's always good to have interaction there. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on the Twitters, you can follow me on sfuoncall or Paul France, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. That's my personal account. Or my business account, which is France Games, F-R-A-N-Z-G-A-M-E-S. As a reminder, there's no T in that. And of course, this lovely TalkCast. Gets to the podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from AV this week. Not much happening. Though, you know, Steve Cole is still recovering. He's doing it. It looks like he's recovering quite nicely. He's actually getting around and actually getting to the office too, which is awesome to see. When it comes to found on the online store for this week, I'm going on to the Starfleet Times, which is 6 through 10. Again, still only $6.95 for these copies of these wonderful old newsletters that were created in the interim. Number 6 was the Origins Report with campaign design. Also Canadian, that's a non-Mueller SSD. They're actually, if you remember those, I think those from the module C4 is where the Canadians were. Also, SFB sample campaign rules, and also Delton DWSSD. Also, again, actually, I forgot where the Deltons were. They were kind of a weird one, which is they were meant for attacking bases. Also, legendary officers in number 8, with also the Fed Carrier Hybrid SSDs, which I don't remember those. Obviously, I think those were playtest only. I don't think they ever got to be real. Though, in number 9, there were scary ships. That were the Andro Shiva. If I recall correctly, that was basically a like an intruder mauler. Is what it was. Romulan Megahawk, the Lyran Super SCS, and the Federation CVN. That's with 72 fighters. And number 10 had more legendary and not so legendary officers. I'm not sure if they had some of the gag officers like Legendary Cook or anything like that. And also two Barbarian SSDs. This is really good stuff for those of you who really love SSB. I would recommend spending the $8. This actually looks like a good one. I forget the last one. Then the last one had the, I think number 5 was it, that had the tournament. There's one of these Starfleet Times ones. I will probably look it up. I'll hit on one of these weeks, which is, it's a great one. I loved it because basically what it was, they took the ships and they broke them down. And how much hull, how much, you know, what the shields were, blah blah blah, went through them all, so you can have a chart of that. Which was, I forget which one that was. And I'm sure I will run into it, and I will definitely point that out when we get to it. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to SFB Online tournaments, we have the Sapphire Star 18 tournament. There's still only 13 signups. We haven't had any more since last week. There's only 3 slots left, people. When those 3 slots are filled, there are no more slots. Moving onward forward to Online Client. Version 4.5.4. I really should have, maybe I should have upgraded the number to 4.6. I was thinking about doing that, but I decided not to. But 4.5, and the reason why I was thinking about 4.6 was because basically one of the big changes was that I changed the minimum Java runtime version to be version 11. So you can't use version 8 anymore. It must be version 11 or greater. Also, I fixed the issue with using Java runtimes, which are greater than 11. Most people didn't have problems with this. The people who have problems with this are the people who are running on Linux, and we actually have players running on Linux, which is great. I'm glad people are using Linux. Haven't had anyone using FreeBSD. If you do, please tell me. I would love to talk to you because of I like FreeBSD, and love to see someone actually using it on as a desktop environment, because I know that's few and far between, and that's one thing FreeBSD is actually looking for towards doing, is supporting laptops and so forth better, so keep that in mind. Also, some of the things that were part of that version added support for pop-up auxiliary windows. I've talked about that in the past. Fix the PF damage allocator so that the sensor scanner DAMCON for any shows up for any box hit. Also fix the problem with game room defaulting to observer mode instead of player mode. And fix the issue with the bullpen chat window coming up to the front when you're dismissing a dialogue window. I'm not sure how many people have had that problem. I know on my Mac I've had that problem. I finally fixed it, and after I fixed it, it's like, as well as saying, ever had those issues that bug you, but you don't bug you enough to think, okay, you just deal with it and you move on. It wasn't until I actually fixed that I realized, wow, that really was bothering me a lot more than I had ever thought it was bothering me. Because after I fixed it, it's like, wow, the client is such a pleasure to use now. And also, I added a standalone chat window because not for anybody else. I added for me because I wanted that feature. Because I that's one of the things that I asked people about, and some people said, we could use that. That'd be nice. But not a lot of people, really were interested in that. But I added it anyway, just because of it's a feature that I wanted to. I still haven't configured. I gotta check to see if I configured my desk, my client yet, because I want my client so that I don't have any chat room in my game control window. It's just game controls. It's just for seeing the units, and that's it. Possibly moving them. Nothing else. So I like it. I like it that way. That's for me, not for anybody else. There's also just a reminder, the auxiliary windows do have hotkeys. You can see the hotkeys when it comes to the pop-up menu. So if you want to find out where they are, just use the pop-up menu or the menu on the actual when you're in the game room, you'll see it as one of the options. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the library, not much happening there. No, nothing new. There's additional feature I added to the online client, which was for the interceptors. There's something called an EW pod in the actual PF that you can add, which was interesting. I didn't know about it until I was told about it like a couple, almost a month ago. But I added support in the client for that, but I figured I didn't really want to add that to the feature list since I don't think many people really cared. Except for the people who are actually doing the SSDs. And so there's no updates for either the SFP or FedCom libraries. And with that is the news for this week. It's me, Samuel L. Poppins, recommending you to start with the universe on call. And tonight, well, you got me. Isn't hey, that's all you need. You don't need anybody else. But just in case you want somebody else, we have Doug. Hey, Doug, how you doing?
I'm here. How are you doing? And hello, everybody, et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
Just Just in case we forget at the end, Gamers of Winter is in 16 weeks. And it's number 16.
Wow. What a quinky-dinky.
Yeah. What a coincidence, huh? And I just happened to update the page, the web page this week. So I got a nice big old blank events page.
I understand. I will try to get my events in by next week. It shouldn't be too hard. As I said, one thing I want to add on to it is a call to arms demo scenario. At the very least, forces me to learn call to arms, because as I mentioned in the previous podcast, that's one thing I want to do. Learn the rules, and then of course I have to play it, and also by playing it, also I have to be able to demo it, show it to others. That is the way to know if you know something, is teaching it to somebody else.
Uh-huh.
So that's awesome. Tonight we're actually going to start with something which is kind of almost a continuation of last week. Wrong. And the reason why it's kind of a continuation of last week is because that's a continuous of the thread that about Effany and Juggernauts in that. I probably questioned, actually it started a discussion which was kind of cool. And that was that, let me bring it up. There it is. Okay. Yeah. James Koopmans mentions that there's a possibility for, which there's other ones posted previously, make an interesting campaign of extragalactic wars invading Juggernauts, run into the Andros, decide they are the real competition. Kind of a post-apocalyptic scenario with the galactic powers gone and only the Andros and the Juggernauts fighting for control of the galaxy. Now, which I brought up the question, which is, if you know anything about the history when it comes to the Andromedans actually defeated the Galactics initially. The only reason that the Andros in the timeline defeated the Andros is because, of course, the Darwin going back in time. No, he went ahead in time and saw the Andromedans and found out how to defeat them, and then came back in time from that to tell everyone, okay, this is what we got to do. So initially, the Andros actually defeated the Galactics. So I brought up the question, which is, how, given the original history, how did the Andromedans deal with the Juggernauts that popped up? Because we have, of course, an initial one popping up, early in the year, so that those actually Galactics dealt with it. But later on, there's some of the later Juggernauts. The Galactics might not be around, or at least, they might be a shell of their former self, and they might not be getting together to fight the Juggernauts. And actually, Jeff Anderson says, that's a good question, Paul. Yay! I actually had a good question for a change. How knowledgeable the question he brings up is, how knowledgeable are the Andromedans when it comes to the Juggernauts and the relative speeds in intergalactic space? And the original already established in canon that Andromedans can go faster a lot faster along the RTN and the intergalactic trunk. And they can GP ships, which brings me back to FNE, which in my mind, it's like, okay, why is strategic movement, how can the Galactic go the same speed as the Andromedans in strategic movement? To me, that makes no sense. The Andromedans should be able to go faster.
I believe that was discussed last week.
Yes, or actually, no, not sure. Was it?
Yeah, it was.
It was last week? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's, I thought it was Jeff. Yeah, that's true.
I believe he gave the answer of being something to the effect of, because they just haul ass from supply point to supply point.
Yeah,
literally.
Was that last week or was that the week before that? I don't.
Last week.
Okay, I'll believe you because my memory is not that great at this moment. The funny part was that Steve Cole jumped in on it and said, "Andros want conquest. Fighting is just a means to an end, not an end itself. They might well fight if Juggernaut was approaching an Andro base on the RTN or one of the intergalactic trunk line stations," which I agree. And then Mike Grafton just replied to something which made no sense. He confused two things. He confused the Juggernauts and the Andromedans, because, you know, Steve Cole replied, "Hey, I think you meant the Juggies having scouts." And of course, he said, "Oh, I can fix that for you if you like." And he also replied that the Juggernauts would indeed have a problem hunting the RTN for the reasons Michael Grafton gave, which is basically they have no scouts, no GSW, DC. They would have to do something like a field converting of, you know, a dreadnought to have some special sensors, which easier than sending a note home to purpose build something and then assumes they somehow figured out the RTN actually exists.
And first thing, that's
true. And the thing is, as brought up, that is, the Juggernauts would have to figure out that the RTN actually existed. The only reason the Galactics knew that the RTN existed was because of the Darwin. And since in the original history, the Darwin did not jump in history. So let's say the Darwin never showed up to change history. Then that means the Galactics never knew about the RTN. So how will the Juggernauts actually find out about the RTN?
Well, Paul, they probably wouldn't. Because, you know, the Juggernauts, if I remember correctly from the scenario, were described as what? A basically robot race and the remainder of a robot race.
Right. It was kind of like Juggernauts which were sent out into the universe as the last thing for a dying race. At least that's my understanding.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Berserker thing from Saberhagen, except that they weren't sentient enough to be self-replicating.
Right. And
or improving in their technology.
Agreed. And my understanding is that the Juggernauts actually modified their ships themselves. They didn't go back to a base or anything, but they modified their ships. That's how the Shrieks came into existence. They modified them from, because originally they were, I think they might have been shuttles, and they got modified by the automated systems to make them into weapons.
Okay then, no idea.
I'm thinking I remember this correctly. I'd have to look up the captain's log to find out. I remember about, because I'm sure it's mentioned in the second Juggernaut, the Beta, Juggernaut Beta, that I forget which captain's log Juggernaut Beta was in. I'm sure that if we had Gary here, he probably could tell us off the top of his head. Mm-hmm. But I'm not Gary.
Oh, the original Juggernaut was like super early.
Captain's log number one.
Yeah.
That I remember.
But also remember, this was before they started doing all the F&E expansions and everything, too.
Right.
And right. Also before they had things like the ISC. It was that super early.
Yeah, agreed. And actually, James Cummins was saying the Juggernaut's manufacturing could be that they have mobile manufacturing units that that enter a system and then ravage it to build some amount of units, and then move on every 6 months, one FNE turn layer. This is, I think, large units are moved with manufacturers, and there's no colonies, no bases, no communication, or relay networks to give away locations, which would be interesting because you need, if you're going to actually have a campaign, because the way James is talking about it, Juggernaut's manufacturing is basically just a self-replicating ships. That's what he's talking about. Yeah, the Juggernauts can find Juggernauts, but not RTN. The engines can locate Juggernaut fleet, but not the manufacturing. They both need to send out scouts to hunt the other's logistics network. The question is, from the sounds of his description, though, the Juggernauts wouldn't actually have a logistics network. They just go in to a system, strip it bare of resources to build their ships, and then move on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Mike Graff just mentioned that the point of Android bases is the RTN, because the Android bases are the nodes on the RTN, which allows them to go from point A to point B really, really quickly. And from the sounds of it, when it comes to the Juggernauts themselves, at the very least, the ones that we know about, they're not organized. So, they might find a base and they might attack the base, and the drones might show up, but it's not like they're going to then communicate with other Juggernauts that are around, unless something changed in later captain's logs, which I did not read, which is possible. I think we'd have to talk to Gary about that. Or I had to do some research into the Juggernauts when it comes to that part of it. Because I know they, in later Caps, like, they actually introduced basically a whole Juggernaut fleet, sort of a scout. Mm-hmm. Though I'm not sure if they were just added for the plain simple reason to have, like, to at least a beginning degree, a campaignable empire. Because Lord knows, I'm sure you've heard Gary talk about it, which is that there are multiple units that are needed, like logistics units, that are needed for an empire to actually be able to run a campaign with. Which, for example, the Omega empires, they currently don't have, to my knowledge, still don't have, like, bases, for each and every empire that are in the Omega Octant. They have a few, but they don't have them all. In which case, there's still a lot of ships, a lot of units that need to be added to the Omegas to have campaignable units. I don't know that many scenarios when it comes to the Omegas, but I'm willing to bet there's not that many that actually have a base involved. I know most of them have just ship to ship.
It's never been fully fleshed out, so there's that.
And if you get Barry in on this one, and I'd have to agree with Barry, which is the rules for the Omegas really need to be revamped and overall rebalanced a little bit. And I'm not talking about trying to balance the Omegas so they can fight the Alphas. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about having so they can fight each other to a degree. Because I forget what it was. I Yeah, there was two weapon systems, which just made it was ridiculous. Which I think it was one of the plasma weapons versus one of the phaser weapons, which is it. I think the phaser were like 1-to-1 instead of the 2-to-1 that is normal for plasma based weapons to just to knock down the warhead strength. But I don't remember. No. And so, but anyway, moving onward and forward to next topic for this evening. Actually, give me a sec here. Go away. Sorry, something popped up. I wanted to kill on my computer at the moment. I'll deal with it later. Has to do with Microsoft Office.
Yeah.
Which is constantly updating, it's annoying. I swear I spend lots of my bandwidth just doing. Actually, I can't say that. I was gonna say that, and I clearly can't say that because the problem is my youngest one upstairs is constantly, I mean, constantly streaming on her one TV. So. That probably takes up more bandwidth than everything else in the entire house. Just because
Well,
of
that sounds
it's
like
constantly
fun.
24 by 7.
Okay.
And
Well, I just did a
hopefully,
dedicated cable line for that.
yeah. Hopefully
Sounds like a
next
good solution.
week I'll be getting fiber here.
Oh, there you go.
Yep. I scheduled for this Monday, but then I got a call on Saturday saying that the guy will not be able to show up. I'm not sure why. Could have been because it was a holiday. Don't know. Or could. I'm hoping that all the cables have been laid, so I'm close enough to my house because they're new to the area. So hopefully it's all set and goes. The thing is. When it comes to the fiber, is just that I'm not sure how they're going to get into the house. I have no clue. Our house
Well,
is.
they'll probably just run a line straight from where it's on the street into your house in some way, shape, or form.
Right. Currently, they have not been using the poles. They've been digging
Okay.
trenches from pole to pole. They've been digging a trench from pole to pole. They've been laying down cable. At least I'm assuming that's them. And putting boxes up, small boxes, on along the road. So that means they're not going to be currently the way I have cable into my house is because it is from the pole. And if they try to dig into my basement, that's going to be interesting. My basement is not concrete walls. My basement was built in the 1940s. It's rock. It's pieces of rock put together to form the wall. That's what it is.
Well, maybe they'll just go through a piece of wood at the top.
There's one possibility which is not easy to do. Which is running it underneath my office. Because they put it through the office, then they have to somehow grab the wire from the basement and pull it along the dirt that's below the office. Because underneath my office,
Well,
there is no basement.
I'm sure the dude will probably have some kind of plan.
Yep, I'm hoping they do.
And I would say the odds are, if you really want to speculate about it, the odds are probably that they're just run a cable like straight up the nearest pole and then into your house the way they have the you have your current connection.
That's
That
possible.
that's probably going to be how they do it, unless they tell you otherwise, because everything else is a pain in the ass.
Yep.
So.
Agreed.
So what was the next topic?
Oh, next topic actually was, I was going, well, I'm not sure. This can probably be a short topic, but I'll bring it up anyway. Cannot hurt. Which is the actual, the tournament. Oh, wait a minute. Hold it. I missed something? Oh, I missed an update on the Juggernaut.
Oh, no.
Which is by Gary. And he's just mentioning that the former product page on the Juggernaut, Mr. Dreadnought on Shapeways, had stated that Juggernaut Gamma was of this class, this and in itself should not be definitive. For comparison's sake, the implication of the Fire in the Deep fiction on Capsule number 41 is that the Juggernaut Titters faced the Hive Ship Redemption. Actually, he mentioned this up, but he had posted this earlier on another thread. But this leaves the question of what, if anything, the Juggernauts might use in terms of logistics, both in terms of what they can bring from another original galaxy or what they can establish in a target galaxy. Because forgot about that part, which is basically that the Juggernauts are extragalactic and they actually did encounter the Sartorian hive ship of Star of Redemption. Yeah, the Sartorians were initially limited in what they could bring with them, namely the resources of the hive, or, you know, basically a nest ship, plus transportable shipyards held in storage. And there's a lot more to it. I'm not going to read the whole thing. He posted this at 11 o'clock this morning, my time. So,
okay.
I did not realize that he posted that. I didn't update that thread in my browser. So, but anyway, yeah. So that will make things interesting. I'd have to read a little more about this. I might bring this up next week again. But obviously, one thing that's happening is that we have the next Sapphire Star 18 tournament coming up. We've got 13 out of the 16. We only have three people that need to sign up. Please, people, sign up. Just so we can get it started. It only costs $10. And of course, you know who you are out there. And that is those individuals that have standing balances with ADB, and I'll list them here real quick. Daniel Bisteff, Ron Brinmeyer, Jeffrey Clark, Graham Cridland, Josh Driscoll, Ted Fay, Lee Hanna, Jude Hornberg, hi Jude, Andrew Koch, Dana Medson, Steve McCann, John Wrigley, Bill Scheller, Seth Szymanski, Jack Taylor, and David Zimbars. And so actually, some of those people are signed up for 18. Number 18 currently has, we've got Rick, I think Massey, I think he signed up. He's not paid for yet. He needs to pay for it. Justin Reuter, Peter Bakia, Jordan Hornberg, Stephen McCann, Jeff Clark, Daniel Bisteff, me, Carl Magus Carlson, Dan Midson. Did he hit it twice? No, okay, I'm confusing the two the two lists. Sorry. Jack Taylor and Seth Szymanski. So we got quite a few people who are using their balance with ADB to play in this tournament. I'm not one of those people because I lost last.
Aww.
Yeah, well, I lost in the first round last tournament. So, I think we still need to check with Rick about if he's actually signed up, because he signed up before I had the 18 signups open. It was still 17. So he thought he might, I'm not sure what he thought. Might just thought 17 was the next one. I'm not sure if anyone's tried to contact him or anything. I will have to try to contact him. Just make sure, keep things going. And I might actually either post on Facebook or send out an email to everyone saying there's 3 slots available. Please, you know, sign up if you want to sign up. Getting back to that, which is that I will be playing in it. I will actually be playing the South Torian again. But this time I'm going to I know I'm not going to have a chance to actually play anybody beforehand, which is awful, because I know that's one thing I need to do. I need to practice playing against somebody in the South Torian more. But in the meantime, I just want to discuss the South Torian tactics, i.e., and then the one thing that, Doug, that you and I discussed, and I really want to take to heart and try out this time around, which is one of the things, the tactics, which, might not be the smartest thing to do if you're talking about it here in such a public forum, but The question is, do those people who actually are playing in the tournament, do they actually listen to the podcast? Do they actually watch the YouTube video?
Well, if they're up against you, they just might. They might have a momentary interest.
True. And that is, so
you could always just do the opposite of what you're saying.
That is true. I can say, screw it. I'm not gonna go with this tactic and go with the tried and true for me. Which
what were you thinking?
The problem is
Taser boat.
The problem is that that's the definition of insanity, which is.
Were you thinking of phaser boating it?
Pretty much. What I was thinking of was, okay, initially charge them with 3 points of power. So that's only 1.5 points of power towards the particle cannon to start with. So I have all 4 of them available, and obviously the shield crackers / web breakers are going to be available because they're 0. They don't... They're held, that they don't cost me anything. But I'm be willing to spend the 3 points of power for 2 of the particle cannons, with minimal energy, so I can actually have them for the first time around. But after the initial battle pass, drop 2 of them and have it so that it's mainly a phaser boat. And possibly either don't charge any of the particle cannons and make it a true just phaser boat, or just try to use 2 of the particle cannons and as an adjunct to the phasers. Obviously, the one thing that still has to be decided is going to be the use of the shield crackers, web breakers. Well, mostly shield crackers. Well, web breakers and shield cracker mode. They want to be really pedantic about the whole thing. Because the problem is, of course, is charging those, because that's going to take energy, which is going to slow me down. And one of the things that the South Torian can do, it can actually keep up the speed if it doesn't have to, if it doesn't try to power all its weapons. So it might be more of along the lines of a phaser boat, and as possible, charge charge up either a shield cracker one or two along the way, or wait for an opportunity where we don't want to be going that fast charge up something other than the particle cannon. Maybe because the problem with the particle cannons, period, is that if you put any energy into them, then you have to continue to put energy into them to hold them, which is the big issue, obviously, because to keep up the speed, we have to keep down our power use as much as possible. And then, of course, we have the special shuttles. Depending upon the opponent, might have to put energy towards wild weasels, or possibly, as crazy as it sounds, which is suicide shuttles. There is slim possibility, of not doing any special shuttles at all, which I think is kind of moronic, because of if you're going against a heavy seeking weapon user like a plasma or like the Zinni, where it has lots of drones, or even the Wind, because Wind Oxbox, what's the biggest issue with Wind Oxbox? The biggest issue with Wind Oxbox is his speed. And of course, he's got lots of power with a good amount of speed because of his two-third movement ship. But of course, he's also a turn mode D, just like the Saltorian, which that's also obviously an issue with the Saltorian, which is the faster you go, the more your turn mode. Fortunately, we don't have something as bad as like a battleship. Like a turn mode or tug, like a turn mode of G, which are...
You're right up there with the Gorn.
Yeah, hey. Bathtub.
Uh-huh. So. Well, the biggest deal here is that it's all going to be situational based on whichever ship you're facing at the time. It's kind of like, what you would do going in against somebody who's a plasma user is going to be totally different than what you're going to do going against somebody that's a direct fire weapons guy. And it's like, given the field that you have and the fact that you have a dedicated group of people that have been playing the game for decades that you're going to be up against, they probably all have plans for if my ship is against X, I do, Y and Z.
Mm-hmm.
My ship is up against Y, I do X and Z,
right.
And you're probably going in well behind the curve in the planning process here, which is the number one reason why they'll be advantaged in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the possibly best thing you can do is, figure out a general game plan and stick to it. I think the part where you get hurt the most is that you'll get in there and then you'll change your game plan partway through, or end up having to play dictated on the terms of the other guy. And that's where you get nailed. So I don't know, it really just comes down to who is your first opponent. That's going to dictate what do you do.
Understood.
I mean, as a general rule of thumb, you can come up with a general rule of thumb for how you're going to fight it, but what makes the difference between winning and losing is going to be when do you break your own rule of thumb.
Right.
And the problem is you break the rule of your doctrine like 5 minutes into the game, and then you pay for it.
Well, usually it's 10 minutes, but yeah.
Yeah, or a turn.
Right, understood.
And the problem is when you're in against seasoned veteran tournament players, they're going to try to figure out what you're doing and then counter that. And how do you adjust to their countering? And then that's when you get played.
Right.
So I think in a generic way of thinking about it is, you know, your speed is your life.
Yeah.
And the only time you star castle is if you're getting into a knife fight and you know you're staying in a knife fight. But it's really, it looks like a big crunchy ship, but it's really a subtlety ship because of the lesser damage per single shot of the heavy weapons.
Right. Yeah, because basically it's a Fed without the Fed crunch power.
Yeah, kind of, sort of, but yet not, because I don't have you pulled up right now because of the bandwidth issues.
Mm-hmm.
But does the Saltorin have like 32 warp?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it only 30?
32.
It's 32, okay. So, you know, speed should not be that bad of an issue. The question is, how many phasers are you going to be firing every turn?
Right.
You know? How are you going to deal with him bricking stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you going to be up against, if you're up against a win, then you actually might have a really good advantage against him because you got those shield crackers. And you know what? You just go in and alpha him with everything and just rip a shield down and do some internals. And then your shield crackers, you don't have to worry about if you're getting more shots into that down shield with the second round of your particle cannon shot later in the turn. You know, they could become a one-shot thing. But the problem for the win then is if he gives you another shield, you can still manage to get within the shield cracker range during the turn. And you don't always have to be at max speed. You know, you can do speed turn changes going up and down just to get a little boost and get in range for those shield crackers. You know, using the terrain of the board is probably your most important thing with that fight. You know, you get in the middle so that you can always dip into the range for your shield crackers. And just be using those and reserving your particle cannons for that after you get a shield down moment. You know? So it's like, he's going to brick a shield, but that's not going to mean anything if you hit him with a couple shield crackers and then all your phasers.
Right.
Yeah. Just sandpaper him down for a handful of turns and mitts you the heck out of them.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you run up against a Fed, you're going to want to keep that distance for as long as possible. See if you can get a shield down and just repeat hitting that shield a few times. And there might be some times where if he's done a mid-range attack on you and you get a rear shield down on him, you might not want to chase him. You might want to chase him, but not necessarily reload all your phasers, but load up your particle cannons to get two shots through that shield if he's running away from you. It's just so situational.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Understood. Yeah, the biggest issue with the Winox box usually, especially the way Stephen McCann plays it, is of course the anchor. That's because he'll fly with lots of drones and be able to use two flights within a 16 impulse range.
You want to know something? If you are faced with a situation where you know you got the overwhelming drone thing coming in after you, you could actually keep your speed up, use your tractors at one point each. You could, you know, instead of weaseling, you can down them with phasers, and you can do it on the cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You've got enough control boxes and labs and stuff on that thing that you can ID drones, figure out what's what, and fire phaser ones, bring in phaser threes to save power.
Mm-hmm. True.
And if, you know, if it takes two shots to kill a drone, it takes two shots. But if you manage to get it in one, that's saving you half a point of power later on. And drones are a limited commodity. So
that is true.
You get rid of all of his drones. You just focus on keeping your shields up as much as possible, keeping your speed up so you don't get anchored, and you get rid of all of his drones, then you have the advantage. And that's whether it's a Kazini or a Win, or even an Oxbox. Not Oxbox, I'm sorry, a GBS, you know.
Yeah, Black Shark.
Yeah, it doesn't matter which you're going after. You know, whatever, or even a Klingon. If you get rid of all of his drones, he's kind of like suddenly finds himself behind the curve. So.
That is true.
I mean, it's like, you know, your biggest problem is probably going to be plasma chuckers and heavy crunch guys.
Right.
Because although your ship looks crunchy, against real crunchy ships, you're at a disadvantage because you're not doing the crunch back. You've got to get two passes on the same shield to have this the equivalent crunch.
True. Very true.
It's one of those late additions to the game that I think is kind of a hard to balance thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to talk tactics, I think you really need to wait to see who is your opponent going to be. But without knowing who your opponent is, you know, the biggest thing I could say is, you know, set a plan and then keep to that plan. Don't let your opponent change your plan for you. You know, old saying of no plan survives first contact with the enemy is kind of semi-true, but it's also true if you make it the truism instead of forcing the other guy to play your game. And if your game is you're going to be a phaser boat and you're going to run around at high speed and only fire phasers and occasional shield crackers at them, okay. Just remember that when you're doing the speed game, you don't have to be at speed 31 the entire frickin' time. You can do speed changes so that you can use your weapons. You can use your weapons other than phasers. And depriving yourself of that as and your opponent knowing that you're depriving yourself is a huge advantage to the other side. So there's some nice generic advice for you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I mean, it's not like I am kind of repeating myself
mm-hmm.
from the last tournament and the tournament before.
Well, obviously I'm not listening.
Oh, no, you listen. You're listening. You're responding. I can tell. You're breathing and everything. It's just a matter of whether you implement what you get shoved into your brain.
Right.
And, you know, there's a difference between knowing and doing and, you know, applying. So take that for what you will and try to apply what I'm giving you there.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on.
Yeah. Okay. Get back to this viewing my lovely face.
Waiting for the cat to attack you.
He already passed by. You just didn't see it. I'm just glad they decided to just walk on by instead of think, oh, I'm gonna now lay upon you.
Yeah, mine's over there taking a nap right now.
Kolonam, huh?
Advanced sleeping time.
Sounds like
she hasn't realized my attention is held by a human being. And she has to jump up and say, hi, pay attention to me.
What quarter, Dave? Dave's saying, showing the Washington 10, Eagles 7. It's like, okay, it's like 20 after 10, which means, given that's also East Coast, I think they always start at the same time on Thursday nights anyway. That means it's probably the third quarter? Is that coming into the fourth? Because it's getting late. They're at commercial. Okay, so he's actually watching. Actually, if I really wanted to, why don't I do this just for freaking giggles? Let's bring up NFL.com. And it's third quarter.
What's the score?
Actually, 10-6 is what NFL.com says. And it's yeah, 2 minutes left in the third quarter.
So. Yeah, that's anybody's game.
Oh, agreed there. I'm just saying that it's a very low scoring game. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying it, though, by that time, by like 14-21, you know, something along those lines. That's the kind of scores I'm used to seeing. But obviously, that is not the case tonight. But anyway, I'll bring up anyway. I brought it up in the news portion, but I'll bring it up again, which was that I did release the updated client this past weekend to a certain degree. There was immediately found an issue with the Windows installer, so I pulled that. So that's still only 4.53 versus 4.54, because it was person would run it and it would crash. So they're like, okay, let's pull that out. I don't want people, you know, having something that's going to crash. And I have not had a chance because of multiple activities through this whole freaking week, including I had to completely redo Starfleet Warlord turns because I messed up this one person's turns. I used someone else's turns, orders, and totally screwed it up. So I had, because of the way Starfleet Warlord works, I had to redo everything. So I had to rerun the orders for everybody. That means every single person I had to. Fortunately, I had a backup, so I could go all the way back to last turn and restart. Added all of those turns, all especially in the manual ones, which was I had to enter in. Let me think, somewhere around 35, 40 pages of orders. So it took me a bit of time. And even then I sent out the results, and then I forgot that I added a zip file. Well, I forgot to recreate the zip file. So it had the previous turns or results. So it's like, whoops. So I had to resend those again. So, and some people I'm sure are completely confused by now because they've got three sets of orders. Three sets of turn results for the same turn.
By the way, you're running a Saltorian, you said, right?
That's correct.
So, as the captain of your ship, if you go on the intercom and you tell a joke to the crew, it's quite okay if all you get out of it is hearing crickets. But I'm touching.
Oh, but yeah, that's...
You're welcome. It popped into my head, and I had to share it.
Understood. Understood. It's close to being a dad joke. Oh, being that bad.
I actually got them to do a little bit of cleaning today. A little bit of
Awesome.
picking up.
That's good.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, they also had the dad mad gas in the day before and cleaned a bit. 'Cause you know how we had all those boxes in the basement?
Yes.
All the used folded boxes. Well, apparently they had a friend over and they were playing down there. All like the three of them, both boys and their friend. And they scattered those all over the place down there in the basement. Dad was not happy.
Yes. I can understand why they want to put them down, but you gotta clean them up.
They actually put them up. Oh, they were playing like island something, making an island out of them. And I'm like, I don't do that in the basement because if we get heavy rain, we get water in the basement that's just gonna soak into the cardboard and blah 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 blah. They got the lecture. But I digress.
Yes, you do digress. But it's good to hear that the boys are actually picking up things.
Now we just have to have them not put them back down
Yep.
constantly.
Well, when it comes
Pick
to
up more.
those boxes, that's different. But yeah, it's the whole idea of, okay, this is trash. This goes in the trash can. Doesn't go on the floor.
You are preaching to the choir.
Yeah, that's
Preaching to
true.
the choir.
Let's not get started. I've mentioned to some people that, the whole idea of I'm sure I could get rid of half the stuff in the family room. Nobody would know that there was gone. I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts that I could do that. Anyhow.
I did mention Gamers and Winners in 16 weeks, and it's our 16th one. What a coincidence.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I thought it was pretty sweet, personally. That touching.
Yeah. So people actually notice that I actually posted something new on the SLB Online site. Actually, there was one thing I did do on the behest of Carl Magnus. And that is, I don't know, actually, let me bring it up. Which is one, I've actually updated the current tournaments for number one. Number two, I actually added a Sapphire Star tournaments archive page. So you can actually look at the results of all the previous tournaments. So you just click here, boom, it'll show you this was for tournament number nine. For number 10, here's number 10, and so forth. So you can see that what the results were from the previous tournaments. Also, I found a couple of Victory At articles on my website, which I'm sure I previously had a link to. I'm not sure where the link was. Possibly not. Possibly just I uploaded that to have some place to actually have it available. So what I did is actually I added another new page called Victory At Articles, and there are two of them. Which was one was from R99, RA99. It's in 1999. This is a tournament which was 25 years ago. Yes, they've been running for this long. A Victory At article also a caps lock number 26, almost Victory At. This one actually is interesting in that this was Norman Cruz played against Paul Scott in order to 2002. So yes, it's 22 years ago. This is his Victory At article. Of course, the only issue is, of course, in the final round, he was defeated by Paul Scott. So
Oh.
it would never get into Caps Lock number 26 because he was not the winner of
Right.
the origin of the Gold Hat tournament of 2002. by, you know, has, you know, first.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Paul. I'm sorry. I have to correct you.
Yes?
We're getting old. It's not 2002. It's ought to.
Ought to. Sorry.
Ought to. Thank you very much.
Ought to. Ought to go and probably go to bed.
I'm just remembering, like, as a kid, watching the old westerns.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it's, they would say, you know, back in aught 9 or in aught 20 or, oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Go on.
Wow. Yeah. But you
or
know,
even just the movies from the 30s where somebody would talk about the old days and yeah. Well, back in aught 3.
1930, that black and white. Wow.
Well, remember,
were they even talkies back then?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
Yeah, talkies were as early as the 20s, I believe. So, mid to late 20s. It didn't take long.
Mm-hmm. But I know there
didn't take long.
There were for a while there was this, it was silent films, and then you'd actually have a band that would play at the theater, you know, for different scenes.
Or piano player or something.
Right, right, exactly. So. But yeah, they started on the aught to origins. Annie Palmer, then he defeated Peter Bakia, then Toss Crawford, then Tim Sheehy, the drunken fool, then Ken Ruggiero. Geez, it's been a while since I remember his name.
The names. I remember all these people.
Yeah. And of course, Paul Scott, who beat him. Now, obviously, as you're looking on the video, you can tell that, here's the old website, the way the old website used to look like. So I have not updated these pages to actually be consistent with the rest of the SB Online website. So I'm sorry, I'm lazy. But here's the thing, folks. Out there, if you actually written up your own victory at articles, in other words, you prep them from playing like Sapphire Star tournaments or other rated ace tournaments, and basically they're not published in Captain's Log number whatever, they're not published or won't be published because of you didn't win the you were not the victor at the end. You did not win the tournament. Please feel free to send them to me. I'd be happy to post them. My only one condition, and the reason why I have this condition is because I'm concerned about spammers, scammers, and people using my website as a jumping off point to hack someone else's system. And that is, they have to be self-contained. I mean, they can't reference other websites. If you want a screenshot, tell me you can either send me a PDF file which has them embedded, or if you want to, we can set it up so that it can be like an archive, and I'll be happy to host that that image on my website. Yeah, I'd be happy to do those things. But if you want have some place to post them so everyone knows about them, feel free. I will be happy to host any victory at or oracles, articles that, as I said, they're not in the Captain's Log, because therefore I'm not gonna have any problems with Steve Cole going, what are you doing? You're posting my IP. I'm not sure, that's not quite true. I don't know about the agreements when it comes to in any articles that are posted in the Captain's Log, whether the licensing, what the licensing is. I don't know. I give them the articles and I really don't care at that point, because I don't plan on posting those articles anywhere. So if he has full rights to them, I don't care. Most probably not. I probably still have original. But it just is a way of, it's poor form. Carmax noticed that, because he was actually previously looking for that victory at Oracle, written by Norman Cruz. And of course, I hadn't been updating this for a while, so I finally got a chance to update this. Obviously, this will be changing in the future. Right now, it says Sapphire Star 17 tournament. It will be upgraded to Sapphire 18 when we start Sapphire 18. And just want to let you know about that. I actually did do some minor fixes up on the website where basically it was pointed to HTTP instead of HTTPS. All links should be HTTPS at this point. If you notice, you go to downloads, you'll see here that I noted, about what I just previously mentioned, which is when it comes to the most latest update client for Windows, it's 4.53. That's because 4.54 was actually pulled. And I changed it a little bit for the Mac one, in that now, if you look down the bottom, you don't see it. Okay. Let me pop that up here so you can see it. And that is that the link now, I actually am keeping versions of the Mac client. So the actual zip files are now version specific. So just in case there's a point in time where we need to go backwards, or a person wants to use an older version for some strange and unforeseen reason. For all I know, there might have been a really bad version that it crumbles. I'm assuming that everything's working fine when it comes to the people who are using the Unix, in this case Linux, platform for 4.5 and updated, because I have two people who did that on the Discord server. Yes, just a reminder, I do have a Discord server. Starfleet Universe Online, and you can discuss whatever you want to discuss here. Obviously, right now, if you're on watching the video, you can see them. There is a channel called SFU On Call Stream, which is I connect up with every single week. So if you want to join me and actually talk through Discord, feel free. Join Doug, and feel free to discuss things. Obviously, there is, of course, the different chat rooms. I'm not sure what they're called in Discord.
Chat rooms.
Okay.
So you can talk
about Starfleet Battles, SFB Online. This is where we were talking about it, which is Neon. He's right now running Linux Fedora 41, which I think is the latest Fedora. You got someone who's insane. I'm sorry. I feel like people who are running Arch at the core are nuts. I've tried Arch, and every single time I tried Arch, I corrupt the installation every single time. Every single time I try to do an update on the Arch variant, it corrupts it, and I really can't boot anymore. I'm not sure why that happens. What is the steps I'm not following? Probably I'm not following certain steps. But to my point, if you have a distribution where you actually can do that, and it's not that hard to do, you have to follow the steps very precisely, and you have nothing to say, don't do that. That's a bad distribution. I'm sorry. A dummy should not be able to easily kill, really kill himself like that. But, he's using this one. But by the way, I noticed that the situation where I visit and leave one room. Okay. Yeah, I gotta look at this. Yeah, there looks like there's a minor issue with Windows. I think I know why. Hopefully I'll be able to see it. Death and Taxes. He's the one who was a brave soul and installed it on Windows 10 22H2. He actually did. I'm sorry, this guy's really old school. He's using Pastebin and Imgur.com. Like, do people still use those anymore? Yeah. He was asking me 21 or 23, and I said, well, 21, JDK 21, because I've tried JDK 23 on my Mac, and it actually kept them crashing. I'm not sure why. It was just, for one user, it was I had on my Mac, it was, and it's the same actual Mac user, but different login user for the client. One was crashing all the time using JDK 23, the other one not. I was like, I don't know why. Yeah, because him. Yeah, you see this, and you can see his version 2021, and the thing is, it's giving the error, which it can't find the library JVM DLL. Now, in the past, when it comes to the SLP Online client, that error usually indicated that third-party dependencies were not being installed, because I finally. It took me a while to figure this out, because previously I thought it was the antivirus. No, it wasn't the antivirus. The problem was that the third-party dependencies were missing. The installer doesn't include the third-party dependencies, which I ended, I'm not exactly sure why that is, but. It is. So usually the solution was install the actual JDK directly and then install the third party and then we're good. Nope, not this. I have to look at that this weekend. I told my work look at them this week. I just did not have time. Anyway, there it is. Obviously I have a few servers I'm connected to, including Daily Tech News Show, Snubs. Oh, this one, you know, this actually is for what's that one game? It's GPS based. I forget what that was.
Oh, geocaching?
No, not geocaching. It's not the one that's based off of Pokemon, but it's done by the same company.
Okay.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but different ones like Mac Geek Guy was my podcast. I list, like listen to Ox Oxide Computer, Majestic 12 Games, which is as I pointed out, Ken Burnson likes to hang out there on that Discord server. Yeah, it's weird. Actually, they were talking about something which was to me just weird. Let me bring it up. It was rules question. Ken Burnside brings up says this. So, if my weapon is a myopic from ranges 1 to 3 and has a range of 4 and proximity 3, it still damages things at range 1 to 3, and my crew is roasting marshmallows. And it's this damaging things at a range 7 because of proximity 3. You mentioned this is making me giggle the more I think about this. Is it a good weapon? Oh, heck no. Is it funny? Yep.
Hey then.
I said you mentioned that, like, that when he mentions when he says the word myopic zone, ISC just pops into my head.
Yes, it does.
That's the first time that ever had been used in a gaming system that I ever known, which is you can't, when you get closer in, you can't fire a weapon. The closest only one that before that I ever knew of was the photon torpedoes. You cannot fire them at range zero unless they're overloaded.
Okay.
Is it just 0, 0, and 1?
It's been a while. I don't know. I think I would have to look that up. They might be a zero weapon. I think you could still shoot somebody with it.
Yeah, I don't think you can shoot at range zero.
Why don't you pop your rule book open? Take a look. I would if I had one. Sigh. Actually, I would do that right now because that's a damn good question.
Okay, let me bring up this. I'm pretty sure I have them. Da, da, da. There it is. Okay, now. I mean, that would be like E2, isn't it? I know it's one of the E rules. I got the C. Got D for combat. It's not a D weapon. There it is. Okay, there's general rules for direct fire, small targets. E2 is actually phasers. Okay. E3 is disruptor bolts. Photons. Yep. Dun, dun, dun. I am a winner.
What is their myopic zone?
Range 1. A photon torpedo cannot be fired at range 1 in standard.
Okay. Has to be overloaded.
Has to be overloaded, which then, of course, it's an automatic hit.
Okay. Unless you have a weasel out. Or electronic warfare of some kind.
Right. Understood. They don't say it's auto hit. I say it's auto hit because it's 1 to 6. And disruptors, it's range 0. You can't fire unless it's overloaded.
Oh, okay. So it is in fact the third weapon that has that kind of effect.
Right. Well, yeah, but it was never considered a myo. It was never the term. Myopic with zone was never
associated. Yeah, that was the first time they introduced it, yeah.
Right, they said there's a minimum range. Yeah, minimum range. Even when firing without lock-on, where the range would be doubled, the photons cannot be fired at a true range of 1 hex or less, exceptions to the overloads.
Gotcha.
So there was the minimum range, but I've never considered it myopic zone. So. Eagle scored.
Oh, good for them. What's the score now?
10 to 12.
Oh, wow.
So. Oops. Anyway, yeah, I thought that was interesting because I saw that in the screen PPD to me. See, that's the crazy thing about what you can do with Starmada, and it's a very good system for creating weapons and creating ships. You know, actually they have what it's called. Give me a sec. That is dry dock. That's it. They have a little dry dock, which is actually a if they have it as a website also, but I know they have a Excel spreadsheet which you can use to basically design ships, which to me is interesting. Anyhow, I think about it. Oh, Eagle scored again. It's now 10 to 19.
Well, there's a trend.
Yeah, Eagle's actually scoring, which is a shocker to me. But
Well, how are they? I haven't been following it. How are they doing this season?
that's a good question. I do not know. I've not been following them either. What is, let's see, bring up NFL.com site for a moment. See if I can see the da-da-da. Standings. That's what I want. I want to see the standings. Okay. Bum, bum, bum. Okay. Let me look at the NFC. The Eagles actually have won 7 and lost only 2.
Oh,
Commanders, yeah, Commanders,
they're
which is Washington, 7-3. Cowboys, 3-6. Giants, 2-8.
probably. Yeah, they're probably going playoffs then.
Yeah, definitely sounds like it. The Lions, 8-1. Wow.
Ooh, wow.
And how are the Ravens doing? The Ravens are 7-3, with the Steelers 7-2. With
Yeah,
the
those sound
Buffalo
like
Bills
probably
being
playoff.
8-2 at the top of their division.
Good for them. Okay, so
Okay, well,
yeah.
with that, I need to wrap up for this evening so I can push this up and go to bed. Doug, it's always been a pleasure. You have a
Yeah,
good night.
thanks for having me on.
Yep.
Thanks for having me on, Paul.
Will do. Yes. So we have a miscellaneous kind of topics for this evening, but Doug reminded me that okay, I need to listen to him and actually do what he tells me to do, which is to be interesting if I actually do that, and I'm hoping to actually implement said advice. And I'm hoping people enjoyed the updated, S&P Online, as I mentioned, if you have an obituary at article that you want somewhere to post on the internet, feel free to, I'll be happy to post it right on my website. As I said, I prefer to have it self-contained, so you can send it to me and I'll post it on my website, not with a link to your website, because my biggest concern of something like that is that either your website gets taken over or something else happens. So I'm trying to, I'm, let's call me paranoid, and okay, feel free to call me paranoid, and I'll be happy, that'll be fine. So anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.